Genesis 4, verse 10. And he said, What hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground. Cain's sin hath hitherto lain at the door, and the preceding circumstances plainly show how hard he struggled to keep his sin asleep. For, being interrogated by his father concerning his brother Abel, and his father having asked him where he was, he adds to his murder absolute falsehood. And this answer of Cain, moreover, shows that the words of the inquiry were spoken by Adam in his own person, and not in the person of the divine majesty. For Cain considers that the deed was hidden from his father, of course, as being mere man, but he could not have so thought concerning the divine majesty. Therefore, had it been God who had spoken to him in his own proper divine person, he would have returned a different answer. But as he thought that he was speaking to a man only, he denied the deed he had done altogether, saying, I know not. As if he had added, There are numerous perils by which a man may perish. He may be destroyed by wild beasts, he may be drowned in some river, or he may lose his life by some other death. And Cain, no doubt, thought that his father would imagine any other death of Abel than that his own brother had perpetrated such a deed as to murder him. But Cain could not deceive the Holy Spirit in Adam. Adam, therefore, then speaks openly in the person of God and at once convicts him of the murder, saying, What hast thou done? As if he had said, Why dost thou persist in denying the deed? Be assured that thou canst not deceive God, who hath revealed to me all. Thou thinkest that the blood of thy brother is hidden by the earth, with which thou hast concealed it, but it is not so absorbed by the earth and concealed by it as to prevent its crying aloud unto God. Thus did Adam, by the Spirit of God, indeed wake in Cain his sin lying asleep at the door and drag it forth to light. The text now before us, therefore, is full of consolation to the saints to support them against the enemies and murderers of the church. For it teaches us that our afflictions and sufferings and the shedding of our blood fill heaven and earth with their cries. I believe, therefore, that Cain was so terror-struck in his mind by these words of his father, and that he was so confused and astounded that he knew not what to say nor what to do. For no doubt his thoughts were, If my father Adam thus knows all circumstances of the murder which I have committed, how can I any longer doubt that the whole is known unto God, unto angels, and unto heaven and earth? Whither, therefore, can I flee? Which way can I turn, wretched man that I am? It is exactly the same with murderers to this day. They are so harassed with the stings of conscience after the crime of murder has been committed that they are always in a state of alarm. It seems to them that heaven and earth have put on a changed aspect toward them, and they know not whither to flee. So awful a thing is this crying of blood that has been shed, and so horrible an agony is an accusing conscience. But it is just the same also under all other atrocious sins. Those who commit them experience the same distresses of mind when sorrow of spirit lays hold of them for what they have done. The whole creation seems changed toward them, and even when they speak to persons with whom they have been familiar, and when they hear the answers which they make, the very sound of their voice appears to them altogether changed, and their countenances seem to wear an altered aspect. Whichever way they turn their eyes, all things are clothed, as it were, with mourning and horror. So fierce and destroying a monster is a guilty conscience. Unless, therefore, such great sinners are succored and upheld from above, they must put an end to their existence from anguish and intolerable pain and despair. In this place also, Moses adopts his usual brevity, which, however, exceeds in force all words. In the first place, he makes use of a very striking figure of speech when he attributes to the shed blood of Abel the cry of a voice which fills heaven and earth. For how can that voice be small or weak which is uttered from earth and fills the ears of God in heaven? Abel, therefore, who, when alive, was patient under injuries, gentle and placid of spirit, now, when dead and buried in the earth, is utterly unable to endure the injury he has received. He who before dared not utter a syllable of complaint against his brother now cries aloud, and so engages the attention of God by his cry that God himself descends from heaven and charges the murderer with his crime. Moses, therefore, here uses the strongest term. He does not say, "The voice of thy brother's blood speaketh unto me from the ground," but "The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me," etc., as heralds proclaim their intelligence aloud, when with exerted voice they call men together to a public assembly. And all these things are thus written, as I have observed, to cause us to see that our God is merciful, and that he loves his saints, has a peculiar care of them, and inquires about them and searches them out, and that, on the contrary, he is angry with the murderers of his saints, hates them, and will assuredly punish them. And this consolation is most necessary for us, for when we are oppressed by our enemies and murderers, we are apt to conclude that our God has forgotten us and has thrown off all care of us. For we think within ourselves that if God did care for us, he would not permit such things to come upon us. And Abel might also have thought the same, saying to himself, "God surely cares nothing for me, for if he did, he would not suffer me thus to be murdered by my brother." But only look at what follows, and see whether God had not, all the while, a greater care of Abel than Abel could possibly have had of himself. For how could Abel, had it been possible for him to have survived the murder, have inflicted on his brother such vengeance as God here inflicts upon him after his death by his brother's hands? How could he, if alive, execute such awful judgment on his brother as God here executes? For now Abel's blood cries aloud unto God, who, while still alive, was of a spirit the most gentle and meek. Abel, now dead, accuses his brother before God of being a murderer, whereas, if alive, he would bear all the injuries of his brother in silence, and would even conceal all his feelings under them. For who was it that betrayed Cain and accused him of having slain his brother? Does not the text here tell us that the accuser was the blood of the murdered Abel? Yes, that blood still fills the ears of God and of men with its cries, which have not yet ceased. These things, I say, are all full of consolation, especially unto us who now suffer persecution from the popes and wicked princes on account of our doctrine. They have exercised toward us the utmost cruelty, and have vented their rage against godly men, not in Germany only, but in other parts of Europe also. And all this sin is disregarded by the papacy as if it were nothing but a joke. Nay, the papists really consider it to be the service of God, John 16:2. All this sin, therefore, as yet, lieth at the door. But it will be awaked and made manifest in its time. For the blood of that best and most faithful of martyrs, Leonard Kaiser, which was shed in Bavaria, cries aloud still, nor has the cry of the blood of Henry of Zutphen, shed by his own countrymen, ceased, nor the blood of our brother Anthony of England, poured out by his English enemies, not to mention a thousand others, who, although their names are not so prominent and renowned, were yet fellow sufferers with confessors and martyrs. The blood of all these, I say, cries aloud still, and that cry will, in his time, cause God to descend from heaven and execute judgment in the earth, a judgment which will be awful and intolerable to the enemies of the gospel. Let us not think, therefore, that our blood is disregarded of God. Let us not imagine for a moment that God regardeth not our afflictions. No, he collects all our tears and puts them in his bottle, Psalm 56:8. The cry of the blood of all the godly who have thus been slain penetrates the clouds, enters the heavens, and comes even unto the throne of God, and moves him to come forth and vindicate the blood of the righteous that has been shed, Psalm 79:10. And in the same manner, as these things are written for our consolation, so are they also written for the terror of our adversaries. For what think you can be more awe-striking to our tyrants to hear than that the blood of all they have slain continually cries aloud and accuses them before God? God is indeed long-suffering, especially now toward the end of the world, and therefore sin lieth the longer at the door. Vengeance does not immediately follow, but it is sure and certain that God is most righteously offended with all this sin, and that he will never suffer it to pass away unpunished. Such is the judgment of God on Cain. But I believe that this judgment was not executed on the first day of the murder, but that some time intervened between the murder and his terror on Cain. For God is, in his nature, long-suffering, because he waits for the returning of sinners to himself. But he does not, on that account, omit or forget to punish them. For he is the righteous judge both of the living and of the dead, as we confess in the creed of our faith. God, therefore, exercised this, his judgment, in the very beginning of the world, memorable in the case of these two brothers. He judged and condemned the living murderer, and justified the slain, righteous Abel. And he excommunicated Cain, and drove him into those agonies of soul, that the space of the whole creation seemed too narrow to contain him. For from the moment he saw that God would be the avenger of his brother's crying blood, he found safety nowhere. While to Abel, on the contrary, the space both of earth and of heaven gives an unbounded latitude of security. Why should we ever doubt, therefore, that God ponders and numbers in his heart the afflictions of his people, and that he measures our tears and inscribes them all on adamantine tablets? These tears the enemies of the Church of Christ can never erase by any device of theirs, but by their repentance alone for what they have done to his saints. Manasses was a terrible tyrant and a most inhuman persecutor of the godly, and his banishment and captivity would never have sufficed to have blotted out these sins. But when he acknowledged his sin and repented in truth, then the Lord showed him mercy. So Paul had, and so the Pope and the bishops have now only one way left them, to acknowledge their sin and to supplicate the forgiveness of God. But as they do not do this, God will surely require at their hands, in his fury, the blood of the godly. Let no one be doubtful of this. So here Abel is dead, but Cain is still alive. But oh, good God, what a life of misery does he live! For his wishes are that he had never been born, because he ever hears the voice of his excommunication and expects every moment death and the vengeance of God upon his sin. And the awful case of our adversaries and of the church's tyrants shall, in its time, be exactly the same.